Forever Dog.
Hey everyone, it's me, Ben Blacker, the creator and host of the Writers Panel 2022. And you know what that means? It's more of 2020. This is the 11th anniversary of this podcast. I thought it was the 10th. I was planning a lot of big things for our 10th year. Turns out it's our 11th year. Wow. That's a long time to be doing a podcast and to still be doing a podcast. Thanks for listening for 11 years. That's bananas. I'm going to do things a little differently this year. I'm going to bring back some of our favorite guests from over the many years that we've been doing this, 11 to be precise, and check in with them and see how they're doing and talk about how the industry has changed in this past decade plus one. Not just decade. I can't believe I missed the 10th anniversary and 500th episode of this podcast. That's kind of tells you how the past couple of years have been, right? Today's podcast is a wrap-up of the previous year and kind of a memoriam for 2020 as well, and as well as some looking ahead to this current year. And as you will hear in the podcast, I got turned around. It was so much fun to record with these friends and frequent guests. It was so great to catch up with them again, some of whom I've seen within the past few months, some of whom I haven't seen in a couple of years. Some of whom I've worked with, some of whom I hope to work with. So you'll hear me go from sort of bummed out about the state of things and, you know, work in general, to really being inspired by this group and just by talking to other writers. I hope you'll be inspired too. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think you will too. If you've had favorite guests over the years, please let me know. Find me on Twitter at Ben Blacker and tell me who you want to hear from back on the podcast. We've had so many incredible guests over the years. Literally thousands of writers have been on this podcast. And I'd love to reconnect with some of them and hear how they're doing and hear what they think of the current landscape, which is so, so different than it was when we started 11 years ago. It's different than it was 3 years ago. So I think those will be really interesting conversations that I hope you'll enjoy as well. So yeah, let me know who you want to hear from, and I'll try to bring some of those folks back. I think it'll be a blast. Meantime, thanks for listening to this podcast, this episode, every episode. I really do appreciate your ears on this stuff. Enjoy. I could not ask for a better group to talk with me about the terrible year that was and the great question mark year that is coming. I'm going to go around and ask you to introduce yourselves on the microphone. Tell the folks who you are and where they may have seen your name on their television screen.
Hey, I'm Angela Kang. I'm currently the showrunner of The Walking Dead. That's probably what I'm most known for. I've got other things that I'm working on, but that's where you've likely seen my name on screen. And hello.
Hi there, Jay Holtham here. I was most recently, you saw my name on Supergirl. I was on that for the last two seasons, and I am currently on The Handmaid's Tale. But that has not come out yet, so you won't see that until later this year.
And this is your first season on Handmaid's, right?
First season on Handmaid's, yes.
Which, and it's season four of the show?
Five.
Season five.
Season five is the upcoming season.
Gotcha. Great.
Hey, it's Carlos Folia. I was a producer-writer on Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol on the old PCAT streaming network, that chestnut.
Already giving me things to edit out.
that wonderful, wonderful network. And in between hopeful seasons, between that and season two of Dan Brown, I am a producer writer for Eon Flux on Paramount, and it's pronounced Eon, not Aeon. But I learned that myself as well. So
yeah. Good to know. Thank you.
I've been wrong for 25 years.
Yes. I've been wrong too.
Me too. We still say Aeon sometimes, and it's like Eon. It's like, oh, and try typing okay. that 45 times a day. It's amazing.
Good. We'll get into pronunciation of everyone's shows as we go along.
Hi, my name is Julia Yorks, and you have probably seen my name on your kids' favorite television show. But more recently, maybe you've seen it. I just wrote a movie for BuzzFeed, their first kind of big studio movie. That's called One Up, starring Ruby Rose and Paris Baralk. So that comes out this year. Very exciting stuff.
Congrats. That's really exciting.
Thanks.
You are all returning champions, which is why I asked you to come join me today. And I want to talk about this, how this year has been for everyone. I'm not going to sway you with, you know, my tales, but anyone who wants to jump in, and I actually let me rephrase that. Angela, let's start with you again, because you were on a show that you've been running Walking Dead for a couple of years now. Tell me a little bit about the transition to both a Zoom room and how you tackle production during these past couple of years.
Oh my gosh. Well, the thing that helped us on The Walking Dead is that we, because our production is remote, and we've been working with Georgia for many, many years, and I have a background working in tech. Like, I used to work for .com, like in the early 2000s, like I tend to be pretty tech savvy and like looking for new tools. So when I took over as showrunner in season 9, I actually instituted Zoom to conference with Georgia so that we could be face-to-face. We'd just been doing phone conference before that. And I just found that really difficult because I like to see faces and see how people are reacting. So as a production, we were very used to using Zoom, and I'd always had a policy like, if you're sick, don't fucking come to work. If you were feeling FOMO, you are welcome to conference in or Zoom in. So we'd kind of like had a version of that. But I gotta tell you, doing Zoom room like all the time is hard. It's exhausting. And I feel like, you know, I see like, you know, while we're on Zoom doing this recording, like people are nodding because it's just, it's not the same. It's very exhausting. Like, I feel like just mentally, there's a lot of strain to like trying to look at everybody's tiny little faces. Like, there's always like lag. There's always like tech stuff. It's not really a tool that is designed to do like 6-8 hours in the room. It works great if you're doing an hour long meeting or an hour and a half or 2 hour meeting, you know, but it's really hard to be on it all day. So I would say that that was actually kind of like a hard transition, but because we have people who are long running, people that have been on the show, and like there was most of my staff had carried over and had time like working together. So we had like an existing relationship and vibe. Like, I think that that made things a little easier on my show than I think for people who struggled with just starting a room from scratch and trying to like meet each other and get to know each other. I feel like that was really hard. And in terms of just production, it's a nightmare. Like, it's so hard working during a global pandemic as it is in every industry. So, you know.
Yeah, I think that's been pretty well covered on this podcast and others in the past year. Let's pick up on something you mentioned, though, which is like you did have a staff who had been together for the most part for the past few years. And so you do have a sort of, you have a runway, right? You had a sort of easier way into having a virtual room. Carlos and Jay, Carlos, you are in a brand new room on the Dan Brown show. And Jay, you entered a room that had been established, but you were the new guy in the room. I'd love to hear about those experiences. And Jay, let's start with you and talk about like jumping into that new room, which is virtual.
I mean, it was an interesting transition because, yeah, I wrapped up on Supergirl and, you know, the last season of Supergirl was entirely on Zoom through 2020 and into the top of 2021. We got a little lucky because when The Handmaid's Room started for season 5, it was in that brief period of freedom before Delta and before Omicron. And when it felt like, hey, this actually might be ending. Yay. So we were able to meet in person in Bruce Miller's backyard for like the first couple of weeks. And so we were able to like get a little bit of that like vibe check in-person feel before we had to retreat back to Zoom. And we've been virtual pretty much ever since then. We do have physical offices. So a couple of people, and I've done this once or twice, go into the office to Zoom with the benefit of you get lunch bought for you when you're in the office, which is really nice. And you get a little bit, you know, the thing you miss most, that I find I miss most, everything Angela was saying is true, all of the like mental energy and drain. But the good thing is that the thing you miss most is the side conversations, is on the breaks, being able to talk to the other writers, one, learn about them as people and learn about their lives and share all that, but also talk about the show a little bit and kick things around in a way that is a lot more organic and natural than on Zoom. And so I definitely miss that. But you can't beat the commute and not wearing hard pants.
That's true. Absolutely.
It's unbeatable.
Were you able in those first few weeks of meeting in person, you know, it often takes so long to sort of like get into the vibe of the room, even in an in-person room. Were you able to like get something to latch onto in that time that you could carry over?
Definitely. I mean, I definitely think some bonds and some connections were made when we were in person. But also, you know, now having been on Zoom for so long, as exhausting as it is, I also feel like we've all gotten a little bit more adept at figuring people out on Zoom and figuring out ways to have connections and you know, side conversations as well. So it's, again, not ideal, but I guess it's starting to feel like this is probably going to be it for maybe another year before anything like in-person rooms return. So might as well.
Yeah, it's interesting too, hearing like Jay and Carlos, you guys were both on when we did the wrap up last year.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. It was all still fairly new. And like even hearing how quickly we've had to evolve as people and writers and users of technology in this past year is kind of incredible. Carlos, what was your experience on The Lost Symbol? Did you guys start this room on Zoom?
I'm going to go backwards because in Aeon Flux, we actually start. I feel like Michael Corleone, and then just when I thought we were out, they pulled us back in because we did the first 12 weeks of Aeon Flux in person. And it was the first in-person room that I've done since 2019. Right? I did 3 virtual rooms and then jumped into this. And it was amazing. And it was a little hesitant at first, like, do we just elbow? But like, we're getting tested, but we're in the same room. But it was fantastic. And then Delta did a couple 1-2 punch, and then Omicron really hit us. So we're going back to virtual for the time being. One of our writers got COVID over Christmas, and it was like, we took this week off, last week off, and we actually got an email saying, all right, so we should go back to the office on Monday. And I said, we're not going back to the office on Monday. We're not going back to the office on Monday. We can Zoom for the next 2 or 3 weeks, see what happens. And everybody was like, thank God you said that. Thank God you said that. Thank God you said that. And now we're back to virtual because that's just the way that I think it has to be for the time being. But the interesting part about Dan Brown was that it was completely virtual. We had one, I think after we all had our second vaccine, we all met in our showrunner's backyard in Sherman Oaks, obviously. And we kind of just all like stood there and it was like, hey, so that's what you look like. Oh my goodness. Wow. So that's, I remember meeting one of my showrunners and his first reaction was, you're much taller than I thought you were. And I was like, yeah. but for me it was also a hybrid because I left halfway through to go produce because they needed boots on the ground. So I spent 60 days in Canada producing half the season, and it was I mean, for those of us that have been, you know, on set during COVID, it's not fun. Like your face is wrapped up the whole time, and you know, July in Toronto is, you walk outside and it's like, you're just like completely drenched with the humidity, and then you have to wear a mask and you have to, you know. So it wasn't fun, but at least I was able to be outside and be with people as opposed to be behind the screen for the second half of the season.
I will say,
I hope we all.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. Go. I was going to say that's nice to hear because unfortunately, you know, this was my first feature that I've written. And because of COVID, I couldn't be on set. I didn't get to go. I was in Canada and it was like the budget. We're not going to, you know, bring you up to quarantine for 2 weeks. So it's nice to hear that it would have been miserable because it was snowing a lot.
It was extremely miserable. The only silver lining was so I was the third one to go up. The first two were both showrunners and they had the 14-day quarantine. And the day before I was slated to leave, they got rid of the 14-day quarantine. So my bosses were so pissed. They were like, "You fucker! You don't have to stay in the hotel room for 14 days."
Yes. Fuck you.
And I was like, "Thank you."
Oh my god, I did that, man.
Did you?
You did the quarantine too?
I went up to cover one of the episodes of Supergirl, and yeah, I was there for like 5 weeks because I had to quarantine for two.
Yeah.
And I mean, granted, listen, I'm in Vancouver in March, so it wasn't too bad. And in Vancouver, you know, you're up at the Sutton, and I was on the resident side, so at least I had like two rooms to be in and a kitchen. It wasn't like in one hotel room, but it was still pretty miserable.
This is where I take exception. I will say, like, I have friends, actors, and writers who have been up and had to do the 2 week quarantine. I'd be so good at it. Send me up there. I can entertain myself for hours, for days. I haven't left my house in 2 years. I have so much TV to watch.
I barely left my house. Yeah.
Well, Canadian TV. I came back with like an addiction to Chicago Fire. So let's just be prepared for
it. It got dire.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say the weird wrinkle that the Canadian quarantine period introduced, and I don't know if any of you all saw this in your shows, but like, we were, you know, we frequently have actors who travel back and forth to like work Canada to US, and it affected our casting for the entire period that the quarantine thing was, because we were like, well, because of the quarantine period, that Canadian citizen, it's a whole deal to move them back and forth, or like an actor who'd be like, I've got a gig that I want to do in Canada. Can we work that out? We'd be like, no, it doesn't work. You won't make it back in time for our quarantine period. It was just like, yeah, it's like the international lines like became a lot harder. So I imagine that was difficult for actors who are used to being able to bounce back and forth to gigs. You know, it probably cost them some work sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely heard that from people. Yeah, great for safety. And we definitely dealt with that on Supergirl for the entire last season. Because like, yeah, normally the year before in 2019, yeah, we'd have like, someone would suddenly say like, oh, you know, whatever, Sean Astin wants to be on the show. And it's like, great, we'll put him in an episode. And then like 3 weeks later, like, oh, we could use him again, bring him back up. And there was none of that. It was like anything like that. It was, if you're going to write a character in or bring them back, like they've got to be there for a couple of weeks. So like give them something meaty. Or we just don't use that. You have to write around it. And that was definitely really difficult.
That's so interesting. I never thought about that, you know, the toll on creativity in that way, right? It's a lot of problem solving that you sort of have to back into. That's really interesting. Yeah. I want to talk also about pitching in this past year. And sort of, I mean, I have the same complaint that I had in 2020, which is, it was impossible to get any momentum. It was impossible, I think even harder to get anyone's attention and keep people interested. You know, there was a lot of, we'll get back to you in 2 days, and then a person disappears. Julia, I know you did some pitching this year. Do you want to talk a little bit about that experience? And then I think anyone else who has, let's get into it a bit.
Yeah, this was, I would say 2021 was the hardest I've ever worked in my career. It was also the year that I made the least, aside from the year that I was unemployed. So that's a fun, I feel like that's such a writing typical thing.
No, me too, though.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And the last 6 months, I mean, first off, I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm an insane person. But the last 6 months, I pitched 3 different features, all based on IP, all different genres. And some of them were at the same time. And that was the one thing that Zoom afforded me. You know, I had a pitch for the horror movie at 1 p.m. and I had a pitch for this weird indie drama at 4 p.m. And, you know, I was able to, in between, I would go lay on my couch and be comatose for a couple hours and then come back. And, you know, and also for me pitching, I've always really loved to pitch. I think it's one of my favorite parts of the process. It's also, I think, probably the part of the process that I'm better at. And so I've always loved it, but being on Zoom actually really takes away the a lot of the anxiety, because it's literally just, I put it on the screen. I transcribe it into like my own little colloquialisms that I would normally say while I'm pitching, and I just read it. So, you know, I have answers to questions on the bottom. And so for me, it really felt like I was giving a quick presentation and then logging off. And again, you know, like Jay said, I was not in hard pants. So that experience for me being, which is a phrase that I'm going to steal because I love that. But the Zoom pitches I felt were great. I definitely did think that people, you know, weren't buying as much for sure. But thankfully out of those three, we did sell one. So yeah, that was really exciting.
That's a pretty good hit rate. We should also mention, you are in New York and you know, it's
great point.
Conceivable you may not have been had opportunity to even pitch these features were it not over Zoom.
1,000,000%. I think, you know, and I think I talked about this potentially with you the last time I was on. When I first moved to New York, it was 2019 in July, and I basically just kept it a big secret from, besides my friends and my reps, anyone else in the industry. And it was like, nope, if I have a meeting, I will be there. I will make it out. And I don't advise that because it gets really, really expensive really fast. So when the pandemic hit, as awful as it was, it really did help me career-wise with the access to Zoom. And I think it's helped a lot of people in terms of, I've seen a lot of writers who are maybe in Chicago or all over the country who are getting opportunities. I don't know how long that's going to last, but in terms of pitching, yeah, it's been great. And you know what? It's been really great to not have to drive across town to, you know, be nervous in front of, be nervous on someone else's time, and then just be nervous on my own.
Exactly. But I think you're right. Like, it has democratize the process in a lot of ways, that you don't necessarily have to be here to do it. And I think, and I hope that, you know, studios and production companies will be more open to continuing this for writers who are not in LA, because look, we're all having a perfectly reasonable conversation. It's not as terrible as it could be. Carlos, I know you did a lot of pitching this year and development too. Can you talk a little bit about how that process was for you? Just sort of overall.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a little bit of column A, a little bit of a column B. I don't think I would have been able to pitch as much if it wasn't for Zoom becoming the norm, especially since I was, you know, up in Canada for 2 months, and we actually sold a show that we pitched while I was in Canada. So it was really, really wonderful to sneak away from set and, you know, find a corner in the room and be able to pitch. And then, you know, we were lucky enough that they bought it in the room, and it was like, great. So this is all working. I got to go back to set. Thanks so much. Otherwise, who knows how the timing would have been if we would have had to reschedule and wait until I got back and then things get pushed. And I'm a strong believer in pitches. You know, you can do the best you want for a pitch, but it's all about timing, right? So the timing was right for them at that moment to say yes. It might not have been right at that moment in 2 months. So we lucked out there. But yeah, development's been, it's been crazy. It's been 99% Zoom. But luckily, I think it's opened up the avenue to be able to collaborate with more people. For the show that we sold, you know, it was a big bake off. I think I might have talked about it last year on last year's special. It was an OWA that we, you know, scooped up and was able to get through and get chosen. And then we worked with the executives, and we attached a director and all this stuff. And it was great to be able to meet whenever we wanted to during Zoom, even if one of our executives was, I shit you not, he was in like some Caribbean island where the internet was like barely there, but we were able to meet with him because, you know, he was like, we have to get this thing together, this pitch together, let's do it. And so there were no boundaries geographically, and I think that really helped us get everything together. But I also don't want to ever pitch in person again, because yeah, that cheat sheet, my goodness, it's like right there, you can't fuck it up, it's just like right there. And as opposed to, you know, where you're in person and you're like, yes, wants and needs, yes, you know. So I enjoy it.
Yeah. And Angela, I feel like you have been working on a number of things in addition to running The Walking Dead, sort of getting your hand in as a producer and sort of shepherding projects. Were you able to do more because you had to be fewer places?
Yes, in some ways. It's like I've got various projects in development, some that I'm writing, some that I'm supervising, several that I can't talk about yet, some that we're chasing deals on. Like it was like a real like mishmash of different things. So, you know, I found myself pitching like a video game company on the take of their game that we wanted to do, pitching my own network on things mm-hmm. that they brought me but that I still needed to take on, and then going out with stuff to the outside. And you know, there was a pitch that we took out where the writer was in a room in New York. I was in one of my busiest periods of running the show. And if not for remote Zoom pitching, we wouldn't have been able to mm-hmm. do the pitch at all. So like that was definitely an advantage. I'll say that like I, you know, going back to something that Jay said, like I feel like the side conversations in an office like can't be replaced. So that's something I've really missed from this time, but like it is possible for me to squeeze in some more time at work because I'm just sitting at home, you know. Like I don't always think it's the most efficient in certain ways, but it has allowed me to kind of like have a little more time with my family because I'm not struggling with commute and getting dressed for work and doing all of that shit. So that's really helpful. And it has allowed me to be a little more productive in other directions. But I guess that's one of the weird side benefits of the way that we've all been working. So I don't know what's going to happen. Like that's once funny. The world goes back to normal, who knows?
Go ahead, Carlos.
Oh, I was going to say, Angela, it took me exactly what you're saying. The first 4 or 5 weeks of commuting to the room was like amazing. I'm in the car, the podcasts are back, like everything's rocking. And then I realized I was driving like 95 miles a day, you know, total. And it was like an extra hour and a half to 2.5 hours out of my day driving. So after about 10 weeks, I was like, that's why we... It's like you miss it. You miss being in the office, but you're absolutely right. An extra 3.5 hours. I can't wait to wake up not in hard pants on Monday and just rock the Zoom room. It's really great, you know. But yes, but there's pros and cons.
Yep.
I did think you were gonna say that you were driving 95 miles an hour. That you realized like I haven't been driving. Yeah. Oh my god, a quick success. Yes. Kind of glad that it was the opposite.
Yeah, can I tell you? I was right there.
After 5 weeks, I looked at, you know, gas was like $74 a gallon. So I literally bought an electric car after 5 weeks of this room. I was like, get rid of this thing. I'm just going to plug in because I'm spending like $400 a month in gas. Like, no, thank you. So.
The conversation thus far has been overwhelmingly positive, and that does not reflect the way I felt all year. So. I want to ask everyone, and look, genuinely, this may be just me, but for me, the hardest part of this year was the creative part. And like, I feel like 2020, I wrote new material, you know, I felt like I was able to use that time. I was able to find inspiration and get it done. In 2021, it felt a little pointless. It was harder for me to get the bat off my shoulder because for many reasons. But part of it was like, well, there's no momentum in this business. You know, if it's harder and harder to sell stuff, why bother? And part of it was like, it was just hard to sit down and keep my concentration, you know, deal with COVID dementia, which like, I don't think I've even had it, but being cooped up for 2 years, plus spending 2019 with the agency campaign on top of that, during which like, that was a constant hustle. I'm beat, you know, like these past few years have defeated me, and that's taken a toll on the creative and trying to wrap my head around new stories and new worlds. What has been your experience on that side of it? You know, I'm especially interested in the stuff where you're not under deadline, you know, you're not delivering an episode of the show you're working on, you're in development, or you're working on new projects, or you're writing for yourself. Anyone who wants to jump in on that?
Well, first, I wish we were in person so I could give you a big hug. You're welcome. I mean, just speaking for myself, like I said, this was probably the hardest I've worked. And I really oscillated between writing and being in a coma on the couch. And those are really the only two things that I did in 2020. In 2020, it felt like there was, like you said, there's kind of optimism that this was all not going to last very long. And I'm actually a COVID bride. So that has been probably just, you know, once you realize, oh, those four dates that we planned in 2021, those aren't going to happen either. So it's, yeah, mentally, it's been a really hard fucking year. And I think for me, creatively, I didn't write anything that was for myself this year. I didn't write any of my own original projects. Everything I did was pitching on OWAs or, you know, pitching other people's content. And I really decided that this next year I was going to focus. I feel like I've personally gotten in a place in my career where I used to have to say yes to everything. And now I'm in a place where I can start saying no. And so I think that's really exciting. But I did notice that, yes, there was this deadline focused mentality last year, and I didn't have the energy to create.
Yeah, it makes sense.
From my own
Jay,
mind.
Am I right that your play was written in 2021, the one that was just put up?
Yep. Mostly in 2021. 2021 has been a very odd year for me, because it started off actually pretty terrible. Like January of 2021 was definitely like an emotional and mental and physical low point for me. From like 2020 just took its toll in every possible way. And like 2021 started with a lot of sort of emotional heavy lifting. You know, I lost my parents in 2020. And so 2021 was beginning the process of dealing with that and dealing with a bunch of family stuff. And a lot of sort of emotional and mental work for me. The play was part of that. But the something happened, and I'm talking about it, I'm just trying to like pinpoint what it was, but somewhere in there, I sort of like emotionally turned a corner, and I felt like that, I feel like that's really fed into my work this year. I'm actually really proud of a lot of the work that I did. And this turned out to be the year where I actually felt like a professional who knows what he's doing. And I had not until this year, really. Like, there's still tons for me to learn about it, but I was like, oh, I might actually be okay at this. And I think part of that was I tried other things as well, like writing this play. I mean, I've written plays before, but this play was a really big leap for me, emotionally. And then also, this was the year that I went back to comics. And I got the opportunity to write some comic books, and moving into another genre where I was like, and another format where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And comics especially, like, there's no formula, there's no format, there's nothing to handhold. Everyone writes them differently, you communicate differently. And like doing it, I was like, I don't know, I'm just gonna try this. And like, I managed to get some pretty good feedback. I was like, oh, maybe I know what I'm doing. Okay. All right. And so like the back half of this year was mostly a lot of preparing for 2022, and feeling in a place in my career, where I felt like I had control, which was also really new. I mean, it's a little bit what Julia is saying of like, if that's for me though, the control is not so much saying no, but the control is, oh, I can actually direct this ship where I would like it to go, which means I won't have to think about where I would like it to go, which I'd not done, because before it was just, I will take whatever job you offer me, and then I will take that job and do that job. And now it's like, oh, okay, I can that's build great. A plan. And that's been new and different. Yeah, I mean, obviously the world is a dumpster fire, but limiting my time on Twitter the last like 4 or 5 months has been a that huge mental break choice. And like, I highly recommend it.
That's yes. smart. But I also feel like Twitter is the only place I ever see some of you. Like Jay and Carlos, Julia, like I feel like we talk on Twitter all the time and it's the most interaction I get with people that I would rather hang out with. So it's hard to find that balance. Angela, how has the creative side been for you? I mean, I feel like with new projects, you've had to do a lot of that sort of dirty work, right? You've had to ideate.
I'll say, yeah, like you are not alone in feeling that this it was just hard creatively. Like I would say that 2021 was just brutally hard in ways that I didn't even anticipate. Like after having made it through 2020, I went through one of the worst depressions of my life this year, started therapy. As a result of it, you know, I was dealing with just PTSD, grief over lost family members, like burnout from work and creatively, like all of it. It's just a lot. I think like the thing that I felt so privileged about that felt like, oh my God, I'm so lucky is that I had a steady, well-paying job at a time when a lot of people were struggling. And I felt a lot of like guilt about that at times, you know. But at the same time, for those of us that were employees that were working continuously, and I have an expanded season, my entire writing staff, we had family members who died that were hospitalized, loved ones that were struggling, and we just had to keep on punching the clock. And I feel like in normal times, you know, when you're feeling that little bit of like, the muse isn't hitting me, like we're all professionals, like you find your ways to lean on your craft, but you also can reach that point where it feels like the well is just dry, you know? And so I think that that was just a very hard experience. And again, like we all leaned on our craft and we were pushed through, and I'm in a much better place right now, kind of like emotionally and psychologically than I was like summer and fall of 2021, but it was hard. And I did a lot of thinking about like, I feel like as creative people, and I'm speaking for myself, but I feel like with other people I've talked about this with, there's maybe kind of similar experiences. Like one of the things from being in the pandemic is like being careful, you know, like I run a show, like I can't get COVID. I also have an autoimmune disease. I can't get COVID. I was very, very careful this whole time, but I'm just used to going out and experiencing art, like going to concerts and going to the museum and going to the comic book store and kind of browsing what's there. And, you know, every restaurant in LA, like there's like an art wall behind you with like beautifully plated food and like, you know, all of that stuff. And I felt like starved for kind of like those sensory life experiences that help feed creativity. And then in, you know, we've had those few windows where it felt like the virus kind of settled. Like one of the best things for me in all of 2021 is I went to a BTS concert when they were in Los Angeles. So listen, like I had never listened to BTS until this last year. And I started listening to them because a comic book artist, James Jean, who became like a fine art artist, he designed stuff for them. And so then I started listening to the band. And I was like, oh shit, they're actually really good. But what I connected to was they wrote a song about
depression and how hard it was to be creative in the pandemic. So I was listening to this song in the first language that I knew, Korean, and like crying and going like, oh my God, why is it so hard? But I'm so lucky to do this thing that I love so much, but why is it so hard to feel this empty during the pandemic? And then to get to go to a concert, it literally like after that, I had the most creative 2 weeks I'd had like in months after I went to that concert. Because I swear to God, like that kind of stuff, it feeds you as an artist. And it's like, you have to feed the creative part of yourself to be able to create yourself. And so I think like, that was something, like I learned something from that, that was really important for myself, for like what I need in order to be creative. And I perversely have been spending a little more time on social media than usual, not a lot, but it'll be like late at night, odd hours when I'm done working. But I've just chosen to kind of curate my feed. So I'm looking at artists and with other writers. I started following like a ton of writers, even writers I don't know, because I'm just like, this is actually, I don't want to get into the weird shitstorm of negativity. I just want to feed that part of me that wants some social interaction with other creative people, you know? So that's been my experience.
I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I feel it most prominently when I'm watching Survivor, in that I'm watching and I look and I think I'm creating such cool, like, fun worlds, journeys, like challenges for these, you know, imaginary people. And then I go and I sit on my couch. And it's really been, you know, a goal for me. You know, when I first moved to New York, it was very difficult to be an adult, to move to a new city. And I told myself that I was going to start, you know, I was going to start living life. And then it was 2020. And so I really feel like these past couple of years have made it so hard to go out and live life. And instead, you know, I find myself being irritated that I'm crafting these adventures for people on the page and I'm stuck in my house and it's just been very difficult. And now I want to go to a BTS concert.
You know what? They're fucking amazing. Like, they're really good. I was like, I don't know if this music is for me. And I was like, no, actually, like, they're incredible. There's a reason they're the most popular band.
Let me just pause for one sec. Angela, what was that song that got you hooked? What was that one about creativity in the prison?
Blue and gray. It's just about feeling depressed. And like, you know, there's like even this part at the very end that's about like, you know, snatching words out of the air, like late at night and then falling asleep. And I was like, oh, as an insomniac who just couldn't sleep all pandemic, I also like connect to this, like that, you know, just you those words like in the air, and then it's like you fall asleep at like 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever. So it's just, I felt like I really connected to that. There's just, I feel like it's been so hard for creative people, and there's very little that I've found so far where creatives like in the art itself have quite processed that experience. You know what I mean? Because I think for a lot of us that are writers, like we're writing for either an existing thing or we're trying to pitch the next thing. And so there might be like a lagging indicator. You know what I mean? But I feel like Billie Eilish had something that kind of like spoke to that too, that I can't remember what the song was, but it just had like a mention. And I was like, okay, like music is maybe able to react to this emotion faster. So.
And then in 3 years, it's
17
Station 11
type. Exactly. Yeah, that's on my list. I know, right?
I can recommend the BTS Beat Saber pack for those of you that have the any kind of VR. Because let me tell you, BTS with when you're slicing stuff with a lightsaber and a VR headset, that'll.
What is this? I'm gonna get it. This is like at a crossroads. You gotta do it
if you love VR at all. But we have the PS5. There are better VR headsets, but BTS has their own album of songs of greatest hits in Beat Saber, and you're they pop up and you're slicing cubes and stuff, and it's a workout and it's fun and it's loud and That's lots amazing. of uh, I mean, because we can't go outside. So this is that. That's what you do. You slice things. I wanted to put things for exercise. 2020-2021 talk, if that's cool. It's funny because for me, and I think Ben knows this more than it's just the five of us. No one's going to hear this, right? This is a safe space. For me, 2020 pre-pandemic started with me bursting half the discs in my spine, and I was bedridden for almost 45 days. I couldn't move. I was literally, I don't want to say paralyzed because, you know, that's not fair to, but I literally couldn't move. And so I forced myself to rehab as best as I could. And I went from crawling, taking 10 minutes to crawl out of the bed to go, you know, pee, to being able to go up the stairs, to being able to walk and to function again. And then the pandemic happened. It was like, great, I'm back, baby. No, you're not. And it kind of just all shut down. So for me, that was the lens of perspective that I had going into it. So I was like, great, I'm fine, I'm rehabbing, I can move around, but I can't go anywhere now. So this is interesting. So trying to find the silver lining in 2020, which was a shit year, I think for me, I think that's why I was able to really just, like Julia said, work as hard as I possibly could and understand. And, you know, the highlight for me last year wasn't the shows, wasn't the selling the shows, wasn't Canada. It was getting engaged. And, you know, I was finally able to you know, pop the question. And that to me is the highlight that really took me to like being like, okay, well, everything sucks, but, you know, we're going to be all right. We're going to be all right. And we're going to push through. And I guess a version of the BTS inspiration, like that gave me the juice, right? That gave me like the, all right, fuck it, let's go. We're going to get ready for 2022 and beyond. And now, you know, I'm in a place where my year is literally carved out for the whole year for projects. And I'm beyond stoked, but I don't think I would have pushed as hard had it not been for that first half of 2020, where I was like, I didn't know if I was going to die, walk, live, anything. So every day this is the cheese ball again, just the five of us, no one else can hear this. It's like I'm stoked. I'm stoked for every day, you know, going forward. That's kind of how I live it. So
Carlos, you're an inspiration and you're so gross.
Thank you.
Hey, Carlos, plan a wedding in, you know, 2023.
Right, I know. Right now we're at 11/11/22 because the numbers are too perfect. But yeah, there is a world.
Wow.
Yeah,
no, we'll good. See. Wait. Mm-hmm. But that's, you should be, I say, you should be fine by then. Although I did say when this all happened in March of 2020, we were supposed to get married in Labor Day weekend of 2020. And I kept saying, you know, if we have to push in September, zombies are running around. Like, that's the only way this will happen. Now we're getting married in 2022.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And I think too. Like we were talking to an epidemiologist because like we were working on a show. Ooh. And she was like, yeah, the thing is pandemics, they last at least like 2 years and then it starts to set. I was like, okay, so exactly. I'm just not gonna worry about anything until 2022. So
oh boy. No. I was just gonna say my version of that, like I said, was the comic books and like really finding like comic book Twitter and comic book Instagram. So filling my Instagram up comic book artists. And the thing that it, like re-sparked in me is that like, you know, comics is a tough industry. And obviously it's got a lot of issues, but I find that the comic book artists are so enthusiastic about their work and about the medium that even when they're frustrated with the industry, and I think part of it is tied to honestly how incredibly little they're paid, that it makes it this like labor of love and this labor of belief that like you believe in this medium and like really, really being filled up by like a bunch of new comics and a bunch of, and really seeing what they're doing with the genre and doing with format and form. It definitely helped like re-spark my like interest in storytelling in a way
I love that.
And that I think, I didn't expect. You know,
it really is.
Comic book Twitter is awesome.
Yeah, comic Twitter is so good.
Like for real. And it's a shame that they're not paid well enough.
I think all of you have touched on this thing, which I think really is the way out, right? Which is to find that thing that sparks the excitement you know, the reason we got into this, the reason we wanted to tell stories for a living. I think the two most inspired and productive weeks I had this year was while I was watching the Beatles documentary, because watching these geniuses struggle in the same way that we idiots do was so inspiring. You know?
That's on my list for today.
I want to end this right now.
Yeah.
I want to end this so you can go.
For the same reason.
And I'm coming over because I want to watch it again. let's talk briefly before we wrap up about where are we going? You know, like it's we can't look 2 weeks into the future, but maybe we can look a little further out. Maybe we can look towards the end of this year when maybe we can crawl out of at least this variant. What does this business look like? Are we in for more of the same? Are things going to improve? I mean, I think in addition to this pandemic, and we've talked about this a little bit over the past couple of years on the podcast, in addition to dealing with a pandemic and the new ways of working and the new ways of experiencing the world that entails, before that we had the industry campaign and that shook things up. And concurrent to that, we had three major new streaming services pop up who have spent the past 2 years figuring out not just who works for them, but what their mandates are and what their brands are and what they want to hear from people like us who are pitching to them. I think that's starting to shape up a little bit. I think we have a better idea of what HBO Max and Amazon and Apple are looking for, and Paramount Plus. But what does that mean? You know, like, it could change next week, as it's done the past few months. So, you know, Carlos, you talked about having your plate pretty full for this year. What happens next? You know, and I would ask this to everyone. What are you hearing from the execs you're working with? What are you hearing from the writers that you're talking to? How do you see the year shaping up as far as selling, staffing, producing anything?
Don't forget Peacock, the lovely Peacock.
I still don't
service.
Know what Peacock is.
You and everybody else, my friend. You and everybody else. We love you, Peacock.
I loved your show.
Thank you. That's it. Thank you.
I love Rutherford Fault. Like, I think they're doing good shows, but I don't know what to bring them.
No.
Yeah.
I don't. That's exactly it. And especially, I guess this comes out Tuesday. That's fine. You know, I feel like they also, you know, I'm not going to be asked back.
I mean, you'll be asked back here. Maybe not today.
Oh yeah. Here. No, I'm talking about. No, I feel like, so just to talk about our show for a second, a little inside baseball, like obviously we were announced on NBC, and if you think about Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code and that whole, you know, chestnut and that the Robert Langdon world, I mean, that's NBC, baby. That's the slice of cake right down the middle of the country, and like, let's eat it and let's all have fun forever. And then they were like, well, let's make this the flagship show for the streaming service that nobody has. And we were like, what? Okay, but still make it like it was a network show. And we're just like, oh, but like, I don't even understand. Like, okay, fine, great. And we did the best we could and we're happy with it. And I think the showrunners did the just the most unbelievable work. But we kept asking ourselves, like, why are we on NBC? We should be on NBC. I wish we were on NBC the entire time. So in that regard, I think a lot of them still are figuring out what exactly it is that they want. I think that HBO Max, not to bury that lead, but that's where my show is going. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they have done a great job of cracking that nut. Like, like they had like 72 million subscribers. Like that's incredible. That's like what? Since they you know, booted up. And their programming, I think, is really, really phenomenal, because even though so much of it is so diverse and so across the spectrum, for some reason you look at it, you're like, oh yeah, that's an HBO Max show.
Yeah.
That tracks.
It's true.
I would love to find, if anyone at Warner's is listening, I would love to find a home there. Thank you very much. But that's my feeling on that. And having worked for the other streamers, I do feel that HBO Max really, really, they're figuring it out at a pace where, I mean, they were the first channel, right? They were the first channel 40 years ago that were like,
yeah,
you got to pay extra to watch our shows. And people were like, that's stupid. That's never going to work. And mm-hmm. here we are, everybody's trying to be HBO 40 years ago, you know? So I think that they have a good lead on how it's going to end up.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I do miss the
yeah.
awe of the original.
Yeah,
that's true. Yes. We got to bring that back.
Yeah, they do have like a uniquely strong brand identity that they've kind of held on to for many years.
I think for them and for Disney, you know what to bring them, right? Well, Disney sort of comes to you, but you still know what those brands are. You know, is it a free for all everywhere else? Angela, I forget, you're under a deal, right? How is it figuring out and navigating what flies and balancing that with like the kind of TV you want to make?
Such a good question. I don't know. I think like in some ways, I just have to go for the kind of TV I want to make. But obviously, since I'm under AMC, it's got to work for like their network and studio. But like, there's, I don't know, I think like AMC, they don't even really have like one particular thing that they produce under their umbrella, you know what I mean? And so it kind of like works like my lane. Like, I like sort of like, you know, I love genre stuff. I also like non-genre stuff too, but I like things that have like a very character-driven element to it, which I feel like that's the one thing that works for my particular studio. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like you can only really like go towards the things that you love, because otherwise it won't be good. Like I couldn't write a show, like I can't even think of an example. I watched some episodes of Emily in Paris for fun. Like, just randomly, like, because I was like, I need to just put something on, and I opened up Netflix and there it was, and it's like it's such a charming show. I could never write that show. Like, that's not my lane, like at all. It's not even usually my lane of watching, but it was like super cute. So you know, so I kind of know like what kinds of things I don't somebody else could do it better than me. So I think that's the only guide that I have. It's like I'll just respond to something and go like, "Ooh, I really, really love this." Like, even if I wasn't making it, I want somebody else to make it. Then I know that that's for me. But I don't know. I don't even know how to prognosticate. It feels like the industry is in such an interesting transitional time where everybody's trying to move to having their own little streamer. And meanwhile, I'm like, can somebody just make a cable package for streaming? I just want to pay one thing.
Right.
I'll pay like $100 a month. Then I'll pay a little extra for HBO Max. It's like I do on cable. Like, I just want to go to one interface, pay one thing, just bundle it all for me. Just I feel like cable figured this out already. Just bundle it. So
Comcast.
So I don't know. It feels like everything's going to keep fragmenting for a while while everybody like experiments with their streamer.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're looking at another year or two of this. You know, there are still studios, there are still extant networks that don't have their own streamers yet. Jay and Julia, I think, you know, you two are in the nearest boat to my own where, like, you know, we're hustling. We're out there. It's trying to find a home for ourselves and for our dumb ideas. What are you looking at this year as you start to put together, you know, your plan? Like Jay, you talked about steering the ship for yourself. What does that entail as far as like targeting pitches?
I mean, for me, it definitely entails targeting pitches and actually like sending my reps a list of people and places that I want to work with. And a little bit, I mean, I picked up something from Eric Heiserer, who says that every year he sits down with his reps and says, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I expect you to do. And so this was the first year where I sat down with them and it's like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to like work on these pitches and I'm going to work on these comic book pitches. I'm going to work on this pilot. And I basically, you know, implied is I expect you to get me meetings. And like in a couple of years, you know, I want to be under a deal. Like that's the sort of goal. And I want to, you know, maybe try my hand at show running and all of that. Like that's the direction, you know, for me personally, I was just thinking about it, you know, because my reps were very, of course, you know, they want to hear, oh, you want to work? Yes, we would like you to work. Oh, you would like to get a promotion and get more money? Yes, we would like you to get more money. So it wasn't a very complicated conversation. But the thing that the place where we sort of diverge a little bit is, you know, they were like, it's all OWAs. They're like out there pitching, it's all OWAs. And like the way they use it is like, if you're going out with an original pitch, you're starting off in the batter's box. But if you're going out for an OWA, you're starting on second. Like this is something they're already interested in. But for me, looking at like writing a new pilot this year is like, it's an artistic endeavor for me in a lot of ways, really. Like I just want to make something that's undeniable. Like my last pilot, I felt really good about. And I feel like the response that I got from it was, we want to meet with this person. And I'm like, I want to come out with a pilot this year that's like, oh, we want to work with this person. We have to work with this person now. And like, that's going to be digging deep. And that's the way I'm approaching it. Like, as far as I'm with Angela, I think we're going to be 3 or 4 years in this weird chaos of like new streamers and new companies. The companies are consolidating and then unconsolidating and then everyone's buying everyone else. And it's going to be so long before any of that shakes out and anyone has an identity or has a mandate or whatever. And it's like, I feel like the execs I meet, they don't know. Ones I met, they're like, well, I don't know what's going on. You know, they're being told like, you can't buy anything. Maybe you can buy something. Maybe we have this. Yeah. And it's just like, they don't know. They don't even know. Half the time, they don't even know who their boss is anymore. You know, so it's like, I think it's just going to be that for a while, sadly.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing a lot from execs. Execs are like, you know, because like execs, like everybody else, like to try to prognosticate. And this is like the most that I've just heard, like, yeah. I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. Not sure. It could be anybody. Like they could all lose their jobs next week. Like, so yeah. It just feels like there's a lot of uncertainty. And a lot of it's like the pandemic has made things like hard to predict, you know? It's mm-hmm. so expensive to produce something right now. It's incredibly expensive. Like it would blow people's minds if they knew how much more it costs to produce under COVID. And mm-hmm. you always have the possibility that things are going to shut down, which is kind of like a lot of people are taking a COVID pause because of Omicron, you know? And it's just, so I think that there's a lot of uncertainty. We've got like VC money coming into Hollywood and snapping up companies. And it's just, it's a brand new world out there. I don't know.
It's interesting. You know, as you said, it's been a brand new world for 5 years. And I think you all are right that this is what we're looking at for the next few years, at least. Julia, go ahead.
Really interesting too, because I got my start in TV, and really since 2020, I've been only writing movies. And so it's been interesting to see how things are working from that side of things as well. You know, of the three movies that I pitched towards the end of last year, the one that went, I was not me, because I was like, I fucking love this. But I think everyone around me was like, wait, are you serious? This is the one to go. And it's in large part, it's because of the director who is attached. But I, you know, I like to think that it was also because I came up with a very cool idea. It's based on IP. And I was surrounded by people who said, we love this too, and we trust you to, you know, bring it over the finish line. And I think what I have realized and what I hope for next year is really to keep going with that energy. I have been doing this long enough now that I know what's going to work, especially when you're pitching an idea that's based on IP. You don't own that. I don't own that. And so I'm bringing me to the table. And if I'm not, you know, what they have the appetite for, then I shouldn't be the one pitching it. And so I think that's been something that's been very interesting to learn
last year and this year as well. I'm, you know, very excited this year to start working on my own original stuff again. I'm working on a feature right now that had previously been set up somewhere and it fell through. And now I'm like, okay, cool. Let me just write it. I have another project that I'm actually working on with my husband, which is very fun and exciting. And we're still married. So that's great. eloped, hence all the COVID wedding stuff. You know, I have the script now that I got to write that I sold at the end of last year, and hopefully starting production on the OWA that I wrote last year. So I'm really excited. I think there's a lot of fun stuff coming up. For me, the goal is to get to be on set for the next one. That was definitely, you know, a big blow because you feel so disconnected from the project when you're not there on set, but I'm really excited for hopefully 2022 to be that year.
We're and
on
cold and miserable in Canada. the thing I'm hearing from all of you, which honestly, this is what I find really inspiring, is that you know, you're finding things to get excited about in the process. As hard as it can be, and as hopeless as it might seem, or as pointless as it might seem, like you're still finding the things to love about it. You know, whether it's your original stuff or whether it's a property that you respond to, or finding your way into a property that's been offered to you. That's encouraging, and that gets me excited to tackle new stuff. Let's wrap up, as we always do, by asking you, what were those things besides BTS, besides the Beatles? What were some of the things that you watched or listened to or read in the past year that got you excited or inspired? Carlos, let's start with you. What did you put in your eyes and ears this year?
Yeah. You can see it for those of you that are just the five of us. Money Heist finally wrapped up their incredible journey. Casa de Papel, as it should be called, not Money Heist, because I'm still never gonna get over that.
It's the worst title.
They finished their season. It's the worst. It's the worst change of a title for an American audience in the history of Anyways, the
heist right. implies money.
Yeah, and like they're not even. Yeah. It's like right. you know. But it was incredible. It was. I think definitely inspirational. I'll let Jay talk about the one that's number two on my list because I feel like we've both have been raving about it on the Twitters, and I think he's gonna bring it up. But I love The Great. I'm so happy The Great's back. Movies wise, I think Nightmare Alley was absolutely gorgeous and stunning, and I want to put that production design into my eyeballs 24/7. So I would love to work on some kind of Art Deco piece. And a bunch of other stuff, but yeah, that's been pretty much the gist. I've been reading a lot too, but that's been mainly for work, but it's also a double benefit, so I enjoy that.
I know we could talk about Money Heist for an hour or two, but like,
yeah, that's the next. Yeah,
they stuck the landing. Like, that was satisfying all the way through.
Yes they did. Yes,
it was exciting. All right, we'll do it another time. We'll see if we can get those creators on. Hey, if anyone knows those creators, I want them on this show. I want to talk to them, and I'll drag Carlos along.
I have literally, I have
of Money Heist.
For Money Heist,
wait,
Casa de Papel, Alex Pina. I've literally been trying to push that cast of Money Heist onto both Dan Brown and Eon Flux.
Awesome.
That's not proprietary. I've literally just been like, here are my selects, and it's just the cast of Money Heist.
It is one of the most fun things about like discovering a show that you love that has an amazing ensemble where everyone is good as you like. I want to put them in everything. I've been doing that with Sex Education these past couple of years. Jay, what are you watching? What did you watch this year that got you inspired?
I mean, I think Carlos is talking about Yellow Jackets, which is the hotness. It's so good and so fun. And like that's definitely been like a great find this year. I have to credit Amber Alexander for turning me on to it. She was there first and then like insisted that I watch it. Exactly. Shout out. Gotta do the shout out. So that the other things that were really big in my year were The Expanse. That was a huge part of this year for me. The final season is dropping now. The season before I thought was one of my favorite. And then I also reread all of the books and the final book came out and they stuck the landing. So like I spent a lot of time digging into the Expanse this year. As I said, comics of the current Nightwing run and a couple of others have been really great, Human Target. And TV-wise, other or sort of TV or what else otherwise, Squid Game, obvi, was really great this year. And right now, in my, I think I always have an embarrassing-ish thing to admit here. I am now into season 14 of a CSI original flavor rewatch.
Original flavor.
Wow, 14.
Why?
14.
How did
14
this...
seasons.
Weirdly. How many episodes is that? Yeah. That's amazing, actually.
It's a lot of episodes because, yeah, it's full 22 season episodes. Oh my God. But it started in that weird way. So during that brief time when things were cool in like June or so, I went to Vegas, which is a place that I do enjoy. And when I came back, I was like, I want to see some more Vegas. I was like, oh, there was a show set in Vegas. And then I started watching it. And then I'm now fully in. And it's been a journey. It's been a real journey.
I do have a soft spot in my heart for like those kinds of procedurals. Oh, yeah. Like they're fun to watch. It's satisfying when you can figure out the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that writers who work on those types of shows have such, they have plot discipline like crazy.
Those Law and Order writers are machines.
Yeah.
I have some former like procedural writers on my staff and they're amazing with like figuring out like turns and stuff like mm-hmm. that, like and all the character stuff too, but it's it does like impose a certain discipline in terms of like plotting.
Yes, so. Exactly. And efficiency of storytelling, because like you do have mm-hmm. so much plot that's to turn right. through and so many turns that it is just sort of like narrowing it down. So that's it. Been CSI. But I'm finishing it this week or next week, I think. And then after that, I'm dedicating the rest of this year to watching new things.
Listen,
all of
don't do it so on our account.
That's my new.
You got 20 seasons of Law and Order. You got 30 seasons of SVU. Come on.
Oh my God.
Angela, what besides BTS, what did you consume this year that got you going?
Oh, so many things. What I watched recently, film-wise, that I loved was Tick, Tick, Boom. Which is about Jonathan Larson's life. And let me tell you, Andrew Garfield, who I just think is an exceptional actor, is incredible in this movie. And it was just so inspiring. And because the character is himself a writer, although in a different, discipline, there's just so much about it that I connected to, like just the for Sondheim fans, the idea of finishing the hat and how you mm-hmm. can put life aside to your own detriment and things. I found it like such a beautiful performance and like just a really fun watch and an emotional watch. Like Jay, I also love Squid Game. I still have like, I think one or two more episodes to finish of that, but love that. I've been doing a lot of just like international watching, actually. The other show that I've got one more episode
it's
on
so
is
bananas.
Dark,
I love it.
Which is out of Germany. Love Dark. It's bananas, but I love it. It's really cool. And then I'm trying to, I'm just in the international thing, I'm watching a K-drama called Our Beloved Summer, which is just like a just straight up romance. But like what I'm really enjoying is that like out of Korea, like they don't have quite the IP craze that we have here. They do IP stuff too, but not to the extent. And so like I'm enjoying seeing like originals out of other countries. So that's kind of like the vibe that I'm in right now. And then just I'll say like a book that I'm, that AMC got for me as a producer, Black Sun by Rebecca Roanhorse. I just love this read. And I'm not just saying this because like I'm attached to this and like the author is writing the pilot, but it is legitimately just one of the best reads that I've come across in like a long time. It's like, it's a fantasy epic, but with like Mesoamerican indigenous cultures as kind of the center of it. So it's just like, it's so cool. It's so like unlike
other stuff that I've read in that space. So, you know, but I enjoyed it as a reader, and now I'm happy to work on it, but really just, it's the author, like, she's amazing. So just shout out to her. She writes comics too. Rebecca Roanhurst.
That's so exciting. Amazing I will writer. Recommend to you, if you are a fan of Sondheim, have you checked out that book about the making of Sunday in the Park with George?
No, but now I'm going to.
Yeah, definitely check it out. I'm not a fan of musicals, or I don't get Sondheim, but I do love things about the creative process. 500 episodes later, he says. And I really enjoyed the book. I made it through about 20 minutes of That's watching cool. Sunday in the Park, but I read the whole book. So recommended. Julia, what have you enjoyed this year? What's gotten you excited or inspired?
Again, Squid Game. I burned through it, and then I went to visit a friend who had just had a baby, and I made them watch it too. Oh and God. So I watched it again, and I was just like, "Ooh, it's masterful of how, you know, the twists and the turns," and I just loved it. And it was funny because in our house we watched it with subtitles, and in their house they watched it dubbed. Yeah. And again, a completely different experience both times.
Oh wow!
I just really just thought it was masterful, and I also have been super into Yellow Jackets. If you like Yellow Jackets, I don't know if anybody has watched The Wild.
Yeah, it's great.
Which came out
heard about it, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah. I've heard of that too.
Jay, I feel like you would really like that. It's funny to me because I'm trying to decide which one I like more. I feel like The Wild is almost more of a Pretty Little Liars version of Yellow Jackets. And sometimes I want to watch a show with the lights off, and I can't do that with Yellow
also,
Jackets.
Also, can I just say? No spoilers, but I watched the pilot on a goddamn plane without realizing what the hell was happening.
Oh no.
Nope. Oh my God.
Stuff.
What?
I literally stuffed the pilot. And I looked around and I had to close the iPad. I was like, oh no, nobody can see. No, nobody. I have to wait. And then I would like peek through, try to watch it.
No, no.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. Doing that. Oh my God. I have to watch it. A former assistant from The Walking Dead writer's room is a writer on Yellow Jackets.
Oh, nice.
Kearns. She's amazing.
Yeah. I just get so mad at myself that as an avid Survivor lover and watcher and someone who this year alone has rewatched multiple seasons, much to Nick's chagrin, I saw this season already. Why? And I was like, oh, this is the fourth time I've seen it. But I'm like, why did I not crash a plane on an island and have it be a teenage girl? Like, it's just so good. Why did I think of that? But also, features-wise, I have been writing in 2020 and now have been doing a lot of biopic writing. And so I really enjoyed King Richard. I just thought that they really hit the right balance of heart and storytelling there. And so it was like, oh, this is what I should kind of aspire to. And then also, again, this is my embarrassing thing, but I'm not embarrassed about it. This season of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills was probably one of the best seasons of television I've seen.
Nice.
So that's
just what
I have never seen an episode of Real Housewives, but I have to say that I feel like that franchise is probably a favorite in stealth favorite in everybody's town. I feel like it's like everybody watches it.
Yep.
Everybody
Beverly
watches
Hills
it.
And Potomac in terms of the franchises, like have just been, even this year, Potomac, it wasn't the best season, but it was still like heads and shoulders above. Like it's just great franchise. I aspire to write as much tension and drama and the witty banter. Oh my God. I gotta write that.
Listen, right. If you take nothing else from this episode, everyone, inspiration can come from anywhere.
That's right. Exactly. Nobody should be ashamed of what they like.
You should not be.
There's something for everyone.
Ben, you haven't embarrassed yourself with something that you're watching that we should laugh at.
I don't think I've watched anything embarrassing because I haven't watched a ton of stuff. I just finished the third season of Sex Education after rewatching the first two seasons again, and I only finished the third season so I can go and rewatch it again. There's something about this show that just speaks to me, like the emotional heft of every exchange is so perfectly realized. And again, it's one of those casts that, like, I'll watch anything they do, and I've tried to put them in everything I do. That Yellow Jackets, Survivor, like, yeah, that's the stuff that kept me sane this year. we're watching the second season finally of My Brilliant Friend, which I really loved the first season, and we're enjoying the second season too. That's on HBO Max, based on the Elena Ferrante books, which I did not read. And it seems like these are a great adaptation. You know what else really got me inspired? Here's my embarrassing thing. The Harry Potter 20th anniversary special. I wept. Nice. I loved, there was just enough process stuff that got me excited that I hadn't really heard about. The way these kids grew up together and loved each other and all came out seemingly very normal was really inspiring to me. I really loved it. Recommend it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for being here. I could not think of a better group with whom to welcome in what could be a good year. You've given me some hope, and I appreciate that.
I have hope for this year.
I'm glad to hear it. We'll hopefully see you all at the end of this year, and it will be all success stories. It's going to be great. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
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 Thanks, Ben. Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.